Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Whitetail Theories podcast. Today on the mic, it's the old crew, myself, Torin Shirk, and Jimmy. We finally worked out our schedules that we both could be on at the same time. So what's new, Jimmy James?
What's up, man? I just got back from Florida, and you were starting to like ask me questions about the hunt because obviously I didn't kill a bird, but I wanted to save it. I was like, dude, let's just do a podcast. And we'll talk about it so you can hear it first. Everybody can hear it first all at the same time.
So there's been a lot of members actually looking into Florida. The Facebook group, I've been seeing a lot of questions on there. You were specifically going down for Osceolas?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I had applied for the last 3 years to get a quota. They call it a limited quota hunt. The deal with Florida is they have a decent amount of public land, but it's kind of a double-edged sword because a lot of it, they let deer hunting, let them run with dogs. They let swamp buggies in certain places. Dude, they just mow stuff down. Like, it's pretty brutal.
And this is even during, like, the spring? Or are you just talking in general?
Well, I'm talking in general. Like, I know deer season and stuff like that, you know, airboats and all those different things. So, like, even though there's some pretty remote accessed areas, guys can get in with the different stuff. So, in particular, turkeys. That's something that Florida really holds near and dear to their heart. Yeah. Turkeys and gators, and they're really peculiar about that. So, I had applied for a limited entry, and so what happens is, in the particular place that I granted access to, they only allow 35 guys in at a time. The catch is, you only get 3 days to hunt when you get drawn.
Yeah, Justin Edwards was telling me a little bit about that. And at first, I didn't really grasp the concept behind it, but it's making more sense now and then after talking to you. So,
they couldn't grasp the concept that in Pennsylvania, you get a turkey tag, or if you buy your bonus in advance, that you can hunt anywhere in the state.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole season. They're like, what do you mean? Like, yeah, you hunt from the time it starts until it's over.
I was just talking to Morgan about this when I did a podcast. So it's funny when you go to different regions or different areas, even if it's throughout the country or throughout the world, what's normal in your area is exactly backwards in somebody else's.
Right.
So going back to like the limited draw.
Yep.
So you had 3 days to hunt that WMA, but that WMA is open the entire turkey season and they only allow a certain amount of people in that area during a certain amount of time, correct? That's how it works.
That's it. Yep. And in fact, this was, I believe we were the last week of the turkey season when I was just there.
So what do you think as far as how they run that? Do you like that? Like, does it help keep the pressure down? Like, do you think it's a good way about going about things?
Dude, yes and no. So as we know, turkey season in Pennsylvania, I will say by far, bar none, the best week of turkey season is the youth season.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason so is because they get to hunt the weekend before the general state opens up. Right. But, dude, listen, last night I was just talking to a patient about my hunt. And I was like, dude, we're going to do a podcast, but I'll give you the cliff notes of what went down. And he's getting all jacked up about turkey season. And he's like, yeah, I was scouting. And I was like, that's exactly the problem that guys have. And I know this guy's pretty hardcore, but he's like, dude, he's like, I was out there, right? He wasn't doing this, but he said there was a guy walking right down the game lens right behind us here, 80, and just hammering the box call. And like, it's crazy. Like, guys don't put two and two together that you're just educating the birds, you know? So, yes, to answer your question, dude, it's awesome. So I only saw a couple hunters the whole weekend, right? And most of that was just guys like coming and going to their trucks, right? So in that regard, it was awesome, right? Because nobody wants to run into other hunters when you're hunting. But it's been a couple weeks of the turkey season. So you know that unlike deer where you can get into little pockets and get away from people, like when you're on the trails and you're turkey calling and those calls carry, dude, every turkey has heard a hunter multiple times. Doesn't matter how big the area is. It's, you know, hunters get back into those nooks and crannies and the calls they carry.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I mean, if you could draw the first week of the season,
your money,
dude. Yes, absolutely.
So tell the listeners and myself a little bit about like the habits of an Osceola as far as like, I hear that they don't gobble a whole lot. So they're coming in silent, that kind of stuff. And then like, just talk about tactics and then we'll dive into how it went.
Yeah. So my belief on the Osceola is there's so many predators. I mean, there's a lot of bobcats in Florida. Of course, you got your gators and all that other stuff, but there's a lot of predator. I mean, you get the Florida panther down there, right? And I do believe because of that and because the vegetation is so thick, turkeys, they don't have the ability to smell like a whitetail. Mm-hmm. So they're relying on their eyesight. But because the visibility is decreased, right? If they're sitting there gobbling and carrying on like crazy, like they're really asking to just get nabbed by something, right?
Sure.
Not just hunters. So it seems like they're the most vocal on the limb.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get pretty quiet when they get down.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, this past hunting trip, I really got to key in on something that I hadn't paid attention to, and I'm going to pay more attention to that moving forward, is that I didn't really hear turkeys doing your traditional yelps. Your, it was more like your clucks and different vocalizations like that, which are not the first go-to a lot of hunters have. Most hunters are out there just yelping, box call, mouth call, and they're not doing like some of the clucks and the other vocalizations. So I do believe in hindsight, as I said at the beginning here, I didn't come home with the film tag. Mimicking more of that might have been a better choice. But in general, not only do they seem less vocal, and it could be the vegetation, I don't know. But I feel like the gobble, it doesn't like rip as loud as an eastern turkey.
Like it doesn't carry as far.
It doesn't carry as far. Mm-hmm. And it could be the vegetation. Things are flat and they're thick. Where you might hear a turkey on the mountainside here in PA and it just thunders.
That goes through the valley. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like, so put it this way. The first day and a half, I did not hear a single turkey gobble. Jeez. Not one. And I put some miles on the boots.
Now, is that relatively standard? Like, so if a hunter was going down to Florida for the first time to go after Osceolas, is that something that they can kind of expect?
Yeah. So it's funny because I talked to a few guys, and then we compared a little bit of notes when they got back from some of the other field staff, like Brian, and it seemed like the turkeys weren't real vocal. I had talked to Kyle and the guys I was hunting with, and they said that the week prior, they were pretty vocal. There was a couple guys that they were just hammering, and they were coming in. So did they get quiet? You know, this is turkey theories, right? Do they get quiet because of hunting pressure? Is it just the barometric pressure? Is it something else? I don't really know, like, what makes turkeys want to gobble or not gobble. But for whatever reason, you know, we just weren't hearing them. But the flip side of that, right, is if you're not in earshot of the turkey when they're on the limb in the morning and then they get quiet, it doesn't mean they're not there.
Right.
You know?
So that's basically where I was going to go next is, all right, how do you go about locating these turkeys and hunting these turkeys? Do you just wander around until you find sign or hope that you hear one?
Dude, so that was the exact predicament, right? So this is how it laid out. So I drew my tag. And actually, Kyle drew a tag, right? So you can actually bring a guest with you.
Mm-hmm.
If you draw, right? So what would have happened is I would have probably been Kyle's guest or vice versa. But he drew, so we were both able to take a guest. So I had one of Kyle's mutual friends. He came and teamed up. But on Friday, Kyle had to work. So he literally dropped me some Onex pins, right? And I went blind into the woods on Friday after getting in Thursday night. Got in Thursday night. I met up with Kyle. He let me borrow his truck, which was pretty cool. I crashed at a hotel and then I got up real early and I went out. And I was supposed to meet with a guy and he overslept his alarm. So I'm out there, you know, northern PA boy, deathly scared of snakes and stuff. Like I'm tiptoeing around in the morning and it was like Dad had so many heebies, you know. But dude, as the sun comes up, man, there's something about that Florida sky. Like it just looks like it's on fire. And you have like the palm trees and the pine trees and stuff in the background, and just so beautiful. And then you know once it was daylight, I felt a lot better. But so to make matters worse, it was funny because Kyle gave me a headlamp to borrow. Like I traveled super light. I literally flew down to Florida. I took a backpack and I took a carry-on, right? And in my carry-on, I had my crispy hunting boots. I had bug tamer pants because I couldn't find my top, which you definitely don't want to go to Florida without your bug tamer. And I just had a camo ghillie top, my face mask, and then I had a diaphragm call. And that was pretty much it. I didn't really have a whole lot of stuff. So, and I had this planned. It wasn't completely planned, but Kyle's like, dude, he's like, I got the camping stuff. He's like, you can borrow a shotgun. He's like, I got an extra shotgun, all that stuff. So he gave me a Mossberg 12-gauge pump, some Longbeard XRs to take out. And then, you know, I mean, it's just turkey hunting. You don't need a lot of stuff. And then I'm going to look this bag up. He gave me this Eberle stock bag. It was like really called, they call it the mini. Mm-hmm. And dude, that was sweet. And then I took a Helinox chair that like you just like assemble together. So I don't know how to explain it, but it's called Helinox. So I packed real light, but then I took like four bottles of water because it's in the 90s. You know, it's March. Jeez. And it's in the 90s. You know, so you got to make sure you're hydrated when you're walking around. So Friday, I go out and he dropped these different pins, and I mean, I was out a mile and a half from where I parked the truck as the sun was coming up and breaking. So I'm, you know, listening the whole way, if anything was gobbling, et cetera, and all was quiet. So then I start just doing my traditional yelps and stuff like that. So where I had access coming in, because it was so dark, well, that's what I was going to tell you. So he gave me a headlamp to use, right? And when I turned it on, I had like the white light. So I was like, okay, good. So I'm like, put my stuff on. There's mosquitoes buzzing around. So I'm like trying to get the truck door shut to get rid of that light, get my stuff together. And I start going down the trail and I'm like toggling through the settings and I couldn't find the white light. So I had like green and I had red. And I'm like, I know turkeys can see red really well. So I went with the green. It seemed a little brighter. But like now my eyes are like not adjusting properly. I'm like, again, like worried about snakes and critters and all that stuff, you know. It's like swampy area, you know. And dude, it was crazy. So I got in, I'm like a mile and a half back in to where he dropped a pin, and I'm just in the middle of nowhere. And so it starts getting daylight, and I'm like, all right, so I'm gonna start just kind of running and gunning. So that's what I did. So I do a series of some yelps and stuff like that, and then I go and I do that again, and I didn't hear a single gobble. And like you could hear a pin drop. It was so quiet. Like you would have heard a bird for several hundred yards. So my tactics started changing as the day progressed. So I'm like, okay, they're not really talking. What do you do next? Start finding sign. So the access road that I was initially on was what they call a fire break. So they basically till all the sod up so it's just sand. And that way if you have a fire, which happens often in Florida because it's so dry, you know, it can be, they can not only access it, but it's also a place that it shouldn't continue to spread, right? So the trouble was I guess it was pretty freshly like disked up, but just the texture of the sand, it was so dry, they're in a drought right now, that even my footprints weren't really defined. So there was a couple times I'm like, that might be a triple toe, you know, turkey track, but then you look at it some more and you're like, it probably isn't, you know, like
questioning
yourself. Could have just been a deer trap sometimes. And so like the telltale sign, like the signs that I look for when I'm hunting in Pennsylvania is I'll look for where they do some scratchings, mm-hmm. right, in the leaves. Mm-hmm. I'll look for turkey shit, you know, like for that, like that J shape or a little pile. Usually that's not a hen. And honestly, the whole trip, I didn't see any turkey crap nowhere.
Wow.
Which really surprises me.
Yeah.
But then we got to the one night at the campfire, we're like, well, maybe they just aren't using the fire breaks as much, you know. But which is weird, though, because it's like the path of least resistance or a nice place to strut. So it's like they got to be using that, right? But I was struggling finding signs. So what I ended up doing late on the first day is I just set up. So I set up and I would just do some sparse calls. And what actually prompted that, I was coming down a fire break and I saw a bird a couple hundred yards up. So I like slipped back into the palm trees and the thick stuff, and I'm tiptoeing around looking for snakes. And then I popped out and I set up. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to do some light calls. I'm like, if there's one bird in this area, there's got to be more, right? So I'm not even there for 30 minutes. And I look down, I'm like peeking down the trail, and here comes three ladies on horses. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And they're just chumming it up, talking about stuff. And it was the craziest thing, though. I'm like camoed up, head to toe. I had the thermocell running. And I'm just tucked in off the trail just a little bit. And they never saw me. But the last horse, dude, I thought he was going to buck the lady. Like, he, like, turned and looked at the last second and saw me. And he almost turned inside out, but he was just, momentum was going forward. He was behind the horses, and he kept going. So I packed my stuff up, and then I called it a day. So I went back, met Kyle. And then what we did is we packed up all our gear, and we got stuff to camp out. So Friday evening, we didn't get the opportunity to do a lot of scouting because we went and we set the camp up, right? So we had a different strategy for Saturday because now we were camped out at a primitive spot in this area. There's a through hiking trail, so we camped at a primitive spot and we were able to get back in even deeper, right? So Saturday morning, do the same thing. We all go out. It's like a beautiful morning and we all went different directions. And Saturday, what I did was I found a spot that there were some turkey tracks. And so as we got deeper out from where we were, where I was at the first day, just the grade of the terrain started to drop some, right? So with that little drop, because they're in a drought, typically that area is completely underwater. It was just wet. And there I could see some turkey tracks. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, the turkey tracks here, like it's further away from people are accessing, like this should be good. So I actually set up two decoys. I had some Dave Smith decoys that Kyle had. So I set them up and tucked into the tree. And I just did some yelps here and there. And man, I sat there for 3 hours and I'm like, dude, this is starting to feel like deer hunting. And then lo and behold, one of the guys came down through, Matt came, and I was like, do you hear anything? See anything? Nope. I'm like, same. So packed it up, back to camp we went, had lunch. So now I'm like, okay, all of a sudden, real quickly, I'm a day and a half into this hunt, right? I only have 3 days. So I'm literally over halfway through my hunt, and I haven't heard a gobble. You know, I saw one hen on a fire break the first day. That was it.
What's your mentality at this point?
It's a little bit of defeat. You know, I'm not a really defeated personality. So it was like, you know, I'm like, we just got to figure it out, you know. But at this point, I'm like flashing back to when I killed my first Osceola a couple years ago, where I was just on straight public land and it wasn't limited. There was hunters everywhere. And it was like, I killed that bird. He came in silent. He gave one putt before, you know, I saw him, and he just came in silent to the calls. So I'm like, this is what it's going to be, you know. And that's what I was basically doing on Saturday morning, hunting the decoy and doing it that way. So at the end of the day, I'm just like, I just want to hear a gobble. I just want to, like, know that they're there, right? Mm-hmm. So Saturday evening, same tactic, except what I did, I found this spot. There was a convergence of three trails that intersected. So it was basically like a T in the trail. And it was like a cypress swamp at the one side of the T, open, a little open with like and then a palmetto flat that went for like several hundred yards. And then on the other corner, the elevation probably dropped about, I'd say like 30 feet down, you know, over a gradient. And there was a pine ridge, right? And it just looked, it just spoke really good to me. And there were some turkey tracks in there. I'm like, this is awesome. So my tactic was, once again, I put decoys up. And put the decoys up where you could see a decoy from each of the trails, right? And then I tucked in into some palmettos. And I sat down. And I spent the evening there, right? So I got set up about 5:30, you know, because Dude, the afternoon's just brutal to be out there in the heat. You just get scorched. And I'm not saying that you can't kill a bird in the afternoon. Just, we went back, had lunch.
Yeah.
So I did that. Dude, I'm not even sitting there for 30 minutes. And straight, the trail straight down in front of me, there's like a decoy that it's only like 20 yards out. And straight down in front of there, like 70 yards, I see a turkey. I'm like, holy crap, this is it. And like, I had literally just done a couple like soft like yelps and purrs. And then I did like a couple like louder aggressive yelps, because I was like, you know, I let some time until I sat down. And then it was like within a minute or two, I see a bird. I'm like, holy crap. All right, game like on. This is it, man. I'm going to fill my tag, right? So it was a hen, and she took a couple steps, and I could see her. She's like looking at the decoy. And then all of a sudden, she just steps away and heads right towards a cypress swamp. I'm like, what the heck? So I'm like, all right, I know what's going to happen. It's going to circle around. It's going to come and check me out. So like, dude, I sat there for 20 minutes, like, so still with my head like cocked to the left, like where she went, that like I started getting a cramp in my neck. And just nothing, you know, nothing. I never heard anything, never saw anything, no other birds. And I sat there till darn near pitch black dark. And I was like, you know, like, I don't know what your thought process is, but like, I feel like turkeys like to get on their roost before it's dark.
Agreed.
You know, we're like deer hunting, like you're going to hunt every minute. And then when it's dark, then you're going to pack up and go.
Agreed.
So it starts getting dark. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to get out from tucked in at these palmettos to the center of this trail where I can just listen. And that's what I did. So I start packing my stuff up and I step out into the center and like clockwork, straight down to that ridge, that pine ridge, I hear a gobble. And I'm like, holy crap, my first gobble. I'm 2 days in, tomorrow's the last day. Like, and that's how fast this 3 day hunt goes, right? So I'm like, dude, I'm freaking pumped. So then I'm like, all right, I'll do a couple soft yelps to see if I can get to talk to me. Silent. Shoot. Okay. So I like stood up and I wanted to make sure my Onyx right. So like I took a couple steps that direction to get a little better look. And so I could drop a pin like where I thought he was at. And then I backed out. So met up with the guys. How'd you guys make out? Nothing. Told him the story. I'm like, dude, I had this freaking hen. Like, right after I got set up, I thought it was going to happen. And then I heard a gobble. And, like, they're like, where was it at? And I'm like, I don't know if I should tell you guys. Because, you know, and I know they're not like that. But I was like, dude, like, I'm the only guy that heard a gobble in 2 days of hunting. And, you know, but I'm like, dude, like, there's turkey there. I was like, I don't know how far away he was, whatever. But, like, you know, judging by the terrain, I think he's up in those pines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the next morning, that's Sunday morning, the last day of the hunt, get up real early, I'm like, I'm killing this bird. It's going to happen, right? And
so was your plan to get right under him?
Well, that's the tricky part. So hunting Pennsylvania woods, right? You can sneak in pretty close to a turkey in the morning. Out there, you have like these like trees, pine trees, right? Where the first 50, 60 feet, there's not a limb, right? And then you have like this little canopy, and then you have a pocket of that, and then it's just like openings. So realistically, it's like roulette trying to get in close, right?
Yeah, they'll see you coming from
exactly
forever away.
If they see you coming, dude, and they bust out or whatever, or they even see you and they just don't bust out, but you're screwed, right?
Yeah.
So what I did is I came from down the trail all the way up to that intersection, right? And dude, the trippiest thing ever. I actually took a picture of it with my phone, which was crazy if you even get it, the long exposure. But there was a full moon at my back that casted a shadow on the trail in front of me. As like this, like you can just see a little bit of pink from the sun. Like I've never seen my shadow.
That's
with the moon.
Cool.
It was pretty wild. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, I just got a good feeling. Like it's gonna happen. So I get to the intersection, right? And trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And bird lights up.
Jeez.
And he lights up again. And again. And again. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, I went from 2 days of nothing to hear. And I heard one gobble and got this little glimmer of hope. And he's just like, he's just hammering. So, you know, I don't make a peep because it's like,
How far away is he quiet. At this point?
He's I'm like confident at this point he's like down on that Pine Ridge. I'd say about 300 yards or so, right? So I slip in from that corner into that area, and I kind of bend over to try to keep my keep as concealed as I can, and I walk a little bit, and I get behind cover, and then I wait, and then I hear him gobble. I'm like, all right, good. And I go a little closer, and about 50 yards ahead of me, there's like this little cluster of palmettos. I'm like, that's where we're going to be, right? So I like get down on all fours. Again, I'm thinking about snakes, you know, but it's like, it's pretty dry. We're up on this higher spot. Like the things I'm scared of, the cottonmouths, which tend to lay in the cypress swamps and stuff in the water. So, you know, maybe your occasional rattlesnake or something, right? But I'm like crawling. I don't dare use the headlamp, you know. Don't do that. If you're hunting for turkeys, don't freaking use a headlamp if you're out in the middle of nowhere. So I crawl into these palmettos and I tuck in. And just as I'm tucking in, he lights up again. I'm like, all right, game on. Like, he's still talking. Like, he has no idea I'm here. So as I'm sitting there and sun starts to come up and I can start to see better, I can realize, like, there's, like, this dip in the terrain, right? And it's, like, I'm thinking this bird's maybe 150 yards or so away, right? And, dude, he's, like, chatty. And that's where... when I said earlier in the pod here about the vocalizations of the hens, lots of clucking. I can hear the hens clucking. So I'm like, I know he's with the hens, right? And that's what I think in hindsight, that hen the night before that I saw, she didn't go into the cypress swamp. She just cut around that edge and she worked her way down in there, right? So it's getting some daylight. So I'm like, I want to let him know I'm here. So I do a couple yelps and like he'll gobble, but like I didn't really get that feeling he's like talking to me, right? So still time goes by and then I hear a hen cackle. I imagine it's a fly down cackle. I never actually saw him pitch out of the tree, but when that hen like when she like cackled, it was like, you know, that turkey goes he triple gobbled and I'm like, holy crap, right? So I can tell they're on the ground now and it's man, what time? I can't remember what time I got daylight, but it's getting closer to 7:30, right? And 7:30 sticks in my mind because that's the last time I hear this bird gobble, and then it's just silent, right? So I'm trying to like call and do stuff, and I can hear those hens down there. I can hear them clucking and doing stuff, and I can hear they're starting to get a little further away. But I'm like, I'm just gonna sit tight, you know. And see if he'll circle around or something. Because if he pops up on this hill, like it's going to be game over. And when I say hill, like it's flat. It's Florida, but it's a little bit of a gradient, right? So it's just quiet. And now I'm like, son of a gun. Like, okay, like just keep your head up. Like, you know, he can always come back here, whatever. Well, it's 8 o'clock, and I hear him gobble, and he's like way down through. I'm like, shit. So I like instantly just stand up, pack my stuff up. Like I've been here, done this. Like I just kind of know the game. Like he's on his way down through with these hens, right? So now I don't really know what's around that bend because I just poked my head around the night before and I'm not really sure what to expect, but I'm looking at Onyx and I can see that the trail goes and then it like does like a half circle around because of the cypress swamps. And so it's like trying to stay in the drier area, you know, for vehicles or whatever needs to get through there. And mind you, I'm way back in the middle of nowhere, right? So I pack my stuff up, put my chair away, get my stuff on my back, and I get on that trail. I'm like, well, let's just see where this trail goes because I'm not going to blaze through that thick stuff. I have no idea what to expect, right? And I'm just assuming these turkeys are in thick stuff too. Like maybe that's cutting down his noise. I don't know. So I get down the trail about 200 yards and I look down and I see a track that I don't really like to see. It was a straight drag mark of a tail and these real leathery foot pads. I'm like, that's a gator. That's fresh gator track in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
And so instantly I'm like, I'm getting the heebies, right? But the bird, he gobbles again. And I'm like, holy crap. So I have like this flood of emotions, like, I don't know, endorphin release or what, but it's like gator, swampy area. I know there's cottonmouths, got to be around there. And then it's like this bird's hammering right over here, right? So I'm like, holy crap. So I'm looking at the trail ahead of me and I can see it bends. And I'm like, dude, he's literally on the other side of like this thick stuff. So I don't know if he's in thick stuff or it's open and I just can't see it. But I'm like, this trail's going to bend around and I might be able to like head this thing off, right? So I'm like, okay, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get to this corner and I'm going to figure it out, right? So just as I'm like stepping out to where this trail's about to bend, he hammers and this bird is like right there. Like I was like it went through me. And he didn't drum. I didn't like get that like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But he was like right there. I'm like, holy crap. Like I'm like got the gun in my hands out in front of me like Elmer Fudd, right? I'm like starting to shake because I'm like, dude, this is like, he's right here.
Right on top.
And I don't know what to do really because it's so thick. I'm like, I got to get around this corner and figure this out. I'm like, he might be standing on the road strutting. He might be in the woods yet. I got to get to this corner, right? So I get down on my knees so I can start to like crawl and peek around. And then in the back of mind, I'm thinking about these gators. I'm thinking about all this other stuff, you know, the wussy northern boy here. And there's some palmettos that are like just kind of cascaded over the edge of this corner. So I'm on my knees and like I crawl a little bit and I just peek my head out. Now at this time, mind you, it's after 8 o'clock now, right? I'm walking, so I don't have my face mask on. I have my hoodie on because I didn't have a bug tamer jacket. So I got a bottomland hoodie on top of my stuff and I'm like getting pretty hot. My adrenaline's pumping. I'm like smoking hot.
Yeah.
So I put my hood up on top of that because I wanted to try to conceal my face. And I peek around this palmetto. And torn at 10 to 15 yards, I can see the head of a turkey.
Jeez.
Right? The sun is directly in line with this trail. It's going straight east. And it's just like blaring in my face. I couldn't tell you the color of the turkey's head. It wasn't like red or white. Like, you know, a tom will get red.
Yeah.
I can just see like, I can see its eyeball. And I have the safety off and I have the gun up. And like everything just felt so wrong. In the pit of my stomach, I didn't know what to do. And like the craziest part is like something like just, I'm like, dude, I could be in the line of fire. And I'm in the middle of nowhere. But like, I'm around this bend. Like this is how people get shot.
Right.
I'm on my knees at the level of this turkey's head. Right? And I'm on this trail, okay? Because it gets better, dude, right? So I don't know what to do, right? And I bet you a lot of guys would have probably took that shot. I mean, it's just like there's a turkey there. But in the back of my head, I know there's hens around. I know there's other stuff, right? It's spring gobbler. So I like slip back as slow as I can behind that palmetto. And I kind of like just I don't know what to do. So I slip back. Safety's still off. I'm sitting there. Like my hand's shaking like a little kid. And I'm just like, beep, beep. Just do two little yelps thinking maybe he'll like gobble, you know, because I don't know. Maybe he didn't really know what he saw. Silence. 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 And like my heart starts to sink because I'm like, I might have just blew this whole thing, right? And so I sit there for a little bit and then I kind of peer forward and the trail's empty. And I stand up and I'm looking around and now I can see like behind that real thick stuff, it was more open. And I never saw him cross the trail. I didn't know really what happened. And like my heart sank. I'm like, that's it, you know? So I'm like, all right, let's just be patient. Let's be calm. So I walked across the trail. I could get a real good view. And on the outside corner of the trail, it was more open. I could see down to the left and the right. Felt a little better. Could see my surroundings. I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and listen for a while. So I was like kind of tucked back in the trail and I like peer forward to look up the trail and I see a hunter straight up the trail. I'm like, no way. I'm like, is that Kyle? Right? So I start walking towards this guy. He's like 70 yards away and it's not Kyle. It's a younger kid. And he's like, did you see that turkey? I'm like, I saw a turkey. He's like, dude, he's like, he was all puffed up at the corner there. I was like, the turkey was puffed up right at the corner there. I'm like, yeah, I was actually 10 yards from that bird. He's like, what do you mean? And now I walked up and met him. We're walking down the trail. I was like, where were you at? He was like, dude, I was up there at that little like bump out. Well, there was like a little bump out of some thick stuff, mm-hmm. like 100 yards down the trail,
mm-hmm.
right? And the crazy thing is, Torrent, I never saw this guy, right? And I'm telling you, it really spooked me because I was like, dude, this is how accidents happen, right? And so I'm telling him, like, dude, I was literally, like, now we're, like, walked up there. I was like, so you saw the turkey right here? He's like, dude, he was right there. He's all puffed up. I was like, this pine tree right here, I was right there. And he's like, no way. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you. I said, I heard that bird go to bed last night, right? I set up on him. I was on him all morning. And I saw I was following him. And so it turned out when he gobbled a couple times when I was right there, he was up the trail 100 yards and he did a couple clucks, right? And that's when he started hammering. And I'm like, dude, I was like, that's turkey hunting. And I felt bad because he was a young kid. And
that's what took that turkey that direction too.
I think we were playing tug of war,
yep.
Right? And we're on his level. Like when I did that pop with Dave, he said, you want to be on that same level? And I was a little higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was down there. And they happened to be working that way. I'm like, dude, where did you come in from? I'm way, way back there. Because remember, we camped out. And I'm way back there. He's like, oh, I come across the canal. I was like, how deep's the canal? He's like, 12 feet. I'm like, so I'm just looking at him. He's like, yeah, we took a boat across. I'm like, dude, that thing is infested with gators. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, dude, there's 11 or 12 footer, like, where we put in that, right? I'm like, holy crap, dude. So that turkey, I mean, that was pretty much botched. I was like, where did the turkey go? He's like, well, I heard these two yelps. And then he ran back into the woods. I was like, yeah, there's two yelps for me. You know, like, he was right there, man. And I'm like, I'm telling you, like, it's, you got to remind yourself, man, like, this is how turkey accidents can happen. You got to be careful. And the crazy part is I was so far back in the middle of nowhere, I never even thought twice about it. But it's like, you know, God forbid I would have shot and he would have been downrange. You got a full turkey load. I mean,
right,
you can kill
base.
A bird at 60 yards. He would have been getting sprayed like crazy at 100,
mm-hmm.
You know. Or the other thing, he could have shot and I could have been right there point blank with that turkey.
Yep.
You know, it was the wildest thing. And I know somebody's going to be listening to this and saying, well, you're not supposed to stalk a turkey. But at the end of the day, it's like, dude, I was trying to get in position on the trail. You know, I wasn't belly crawling towards this. Like, maybe it sounds like a gray area. You had to be there, right? But the whole thing was crazy. And you know, and the kid even said, he's like, why didn't you shoot it? And I'm like, dude, like, I literally couldn't tell what it was. You know, the sun's there. I could see ahead. I couldn't identify it. I know I could hear him gobble. But I was like, I just like to do the right thing, you know? And I was like, if I would have shot a hen, he's like, oh, there's like nowhere to lose a bird. And it's like, dude, I get that, man. But it's like, you gotta think about it, man. And it's like, how would you feel if I would have shot a hen? I don't know, you know. Or how would it have been if that was a game warden? You know, I'd have been really screwed. The right thing is always when in doubt, don't pull the trigger. You know, you gotta be. And I'll tell you right now, Torin, I didn't kill a bird, but that experience, like, you can't put a price tag on it. And for a kid, you know, I feel bad in a way that I'm sure he thinks that he could have killed that bird. He might have been able to. It might have came down the road to him, you know. But that's hunting, you know.
Right, exactly. That's what I was just about to say.
It's tough, you know, and I felt bad. I felt almost as bad for that kid that he didn't get that opportunity to kill the bird.
Well, here's the flip side of it too, though, Jimmy. Like, think of the teaching moment that you just, like, enforced to that kid too. Like,
right.
That, I mean, that experience he's always going to remember for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And by you not pulling the trigger, you don't know what long-term effects. I mean, you might have changed his mind for, like, the perception of potentially dumping a hen in the woods. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Like, that moment, although you didn't fill your tag, was a great, great moment if you look on the other side of the coin of what you did.
Right. No, I don't regret it at all, you know. Yeah, obviously everybody wants to go hunting, fill their tag, whatever, but it doesn't always work that way. And I think that's something that takes time in life just to, mature and, you know,
exactly.
And realize it's not all about that. But dude, it was a great hunt. We didn't even go out that afternoon. We, you know, until we packed camp up and all that stuff. I was like, dude, like, I was satisfied. And
so as far as Osceola hunting goes, like, the way all the stories that I've ever heard, a lot of that stuff you don't really experience. They come in silent. You don't really hear them hammering like that.
Right.
So, like, just getting that aspect of it as far as Osceola hunting goes, I mean, that sounds like it's well worth it. And then, like, filling it would have just been the cherry on top.
Exactly. No, so what's funny, because I was talking to the kid about how I was set up the night before, I told him where I was at, and typically, I don't like to tell people everything that I do, because if it's you know, my spot, whatever. But I realized I'm on a limited day hunt, kind of botched his kid's opportunity. So I was just straight up with him, told him, you know, how it all went down. And turkeys aren't like deer too, where it's like they're going to come back at the same spot necessarily. Always. They might, you know, but they have thousands of acres there. So I was like, you know, I set up a decoy, saw that hen, told him the whole story. And he's like, man, he's like, we don't like to use decoys. He said, these birds, a lot of times, they'll see them and they'll run. Now, Kyle, on the other hand, he's had great success with decoys. So I think a lot of his presentation, it's the quality of the decoy that you use too. Like I said, I have those Dave Smiths. They're pretty realistic. The con of the Dave Smith decoys is it's just big and bulky and heavy. So I don't know. I like to run and gun more than anything, but it's like when you have limited visibility of vegetation, right? Having the decoy, I think, can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. I think a decoy really fits your personality as a turkey hunter too.
Mm-hmm.
So like running and gunning and then setting up in an area where they can see something. Like you like to hunt some places that are relatively open, like not super open, but like there's still cover, but an opening where they can see around. You need to have a decoy there, otherwise they're gonna see that there's not a turkey there.
Right.
Just like in PA.
Yeah, there's something to that, and that's where like when we did the pod with Dave at the Pinhoti Project, you know, one of the tactics is trying to be in an area that's a little bit thicker,
mm-hmm.
because if they don't see something, they know something's wrong, you know. In this particular instance, dude, if I could have crept around that with like a fan and just got a little eye attention, dude, that could have made all the difference, you know. I didn't have a fan on me. So I wanted to add this in here. So this is pretty wild, and I'm sure Kyle's going to listen to this. I'm going to botch exactly how it went down, but you guys got to remember how small the hunting community is. So Kyle is at work on Monday, right? We're back. He's back at work, and he was talking to a guy, and I'm not sure how it all went down. That's why someone to botch it. But he was talking to a guy about the weekend, right? And the guy knew he had a buddy coming down from PA and stuff. And he says, yeah. He's like, dude, you won't believe this. He's like, my buddy had a turkey at 10 yards and didn't pull the trigger, right? And the guy fires back at him. He says, did a hunter walk around the turn like right after that happened? And Kyle's like, what do you mean? He's like, did your buddy, when he saw that turkey, he said, did a hunter walk over and talk to him like right after that? He's like, yeah, actually, that is what happened. He's like, yeah. He's like, so my friend, I think his name's Preston, right? Turns out, I told him this kid's like 18, real tall, big boy, 14 years old.
Holy crap.
Would have been his first turkey.
Holy crap.
Yep. And told him the same story that what happened, and he ran into me. And like, that's how small a thing is, right? So you got, you know, just being ethical, like you said, and I wanted to tie that together. It comes back around, you know, and, just being a good steward and being, if you do the wrong things, it'll come back around to bite you. And, it was pretty wild though, but it turned out that's how those guys like to hunt that spot. They come in on the canal, cross the canal in a boat and everything like that. And then, I just couldn't believe that. So these guys though, from where we're hunting, about 40-minute drive from where Kyle lives. These guys live 2 hours away.
Holy crap.
So, like, just, I mean, the coincidence.
And thousands of acres, too.
Thousands of acres, right. The coincidence is pretty unreal, you know, that happened. But, and I said to Kyle, I'm like, dude, like, did that validate the story for you? Like, I was like, because I know it sounded like kind of far-fetched. He said, no, he's like, I believed you. But he's like, I just couldn't believe this guy was like, did your buddy run into somebody right after that, you know? And that's just how it went down, you know. But again, when you're turkey hunting, right, and you got a vocal bird, dude, you're gonna attract all the hunters in an area. They're gonna come to it too. So
yep.
And I think that happens too more than guys realize. You know, when they might have done everything right turkey hunting and it didn't work out, they don't know if a hunter slipped in there and messed things up.
Yeah.
So you just got to keep your head up too. If it's not working out, you got to trust your instincts. And as I always tell people, you know, call less, do whatever. And maybe if I wouldn't have yelped too, that turkey would have hung out for a little longer. We could have played more tug of war between the two hunters, and one of us would have killed it versus me just being this weird thing, popped around the turn and then called. I don't know. It's hard to say.
It is.
You know?
That's what I hate about turkey hunting is, like, how many variables aren't in, like, you can't control.
There's no playbook.
There's no playbook, and there's so many variables that you can't control. Like, deer hunting, yeah, there are certain things that you can't control, like other hunters and how they scent bump stuff, but, like, when it comes to turkey hunting, and them being vocal, like you just said, if you have X amount of hunters in an area and they hear a bird gobble, they're all moving in.
Yep.
And it just makes it that much tougher. I was talking to Jimmy Pollard on the podcast that I did with him, and he hangs in areas like pretty long, which I like blew my mind. Like if I don't hear something, I'm usually out running and gunning like you. And he's like, eventually a bird's going to come through. As long as you have pre-scouted that area and you know that there's good turkey sign, it's just a matter of waiting it out.
No, I agree with that. And the more that I'm realizing, like, dude, these turkeys are little raptors, right? They're just running around, like, you know, looking around.
Exactly.
You know? And, I mean, it's breeding season, right? So it's just like a buck in the rut, except it's even crazier because they're only out during daylight hours. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, if you do that. But if you call too much, and, like, I struggle with that so much because I just want to make stuff happen, right?
Right.
But, you know, that's where, like, I've been trying to look at my phone and be more cognizant, too. Like, okay, like, 20 or 30 minutes, like, you got to keep at least that. And then I like to do a lot of just softer calls, and then maybe once an hour do a louder call, and then just do softer stuff in between there. And it's crazy, though, too, when you get a bird working in and you do the real soft stuff, how much it just gets them worked up. But if the turkeys are there, they're there, right? And I don't know how much that they migrate in Florida, how spread out that they are or not. And then there's a whole other variant, and we talked about this in the other podcast that you'll be putting up here. But I know you didn't get to listen to that yet. But so we were doing some scouting. It was midday. We come around a turn, and a turkey was like up in a roost tree, like in the middle of daylight on this turn, and then he busted out of the tree, right? And that's where Kyle ended up hunting in that area, and he heard some gobbles on that last morning, but he couldn't break them off the hens either. But I got to wondering, I'm like, dude, if these turkeys are crossing these fire breaks and stuff, is it possible a turkey will go up to a vantage point, watch out for predators, and look for hens?
Potentially, absolutely, I would think. So that's one of the things I want to ask you too, is like, so here in PA, we'll go out in the evening,
mm-hmm.
roost a bird, put a bird to bed. Is it similar like that for Osceolas in Florida?
Well, that's what I did. I mean, that's what I did, except I didn't really put him to bed. I heard him call, and he didn't respond to me. But he was all henned up. And I think that gobble is, like, just a way to let other birds know, like, this is where I'll be at. I don't know. I don't know why they do it, you know?
Yeah, so I was talking to Jimmy about that, and, like, he was saying about how some of it is potentially territorial, letting other gobblers know that, hey, this is my area.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, hens, this is where I'll be at in the morning, basically what you just said.
Right.
And I was curious, like, do Osceolas do the exact same thing? Like, are they gobbling in the evening and more vocal in the evening, just like the birds here are?
I'd be willing to bet 100% he was on his limb already, right? And maybe that's why they're more vocal when they're with their hens, too, is that there's more eyes to see.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
But they get real quiet, and when they're out there looking around for hens, they don't gobble necessarily. And I can't say that's 100% the case, because there's definitely something too, like the week before, you know, one of their mutual friends killed a bird, and it was real vocal. It was gobbling on the way in.
What was the quota the week before?
It's the same thing throughout the season. So you get 3,500 for 3 days. Yeah. And dude, there was only a couple birds killed because you got to check them in.
Yeah.
There's a station. There's one road in and out, and then it splits around, and then you can park and you can hunt, but you have to check out. When you kill something, and I forget the total, but it wasn't many birds killed. They don't call them swamp ghosts or nothing,
right?
You know, so dude, awesome experience, and we camped out, dude. We camped out for two nights, and I told you that other podcast we did out in the middle of nowhere. It was so cool because it was just like it was nothing, you know, and the moon was so bright with the full moon, like you could see pretty good during the night. It was up all night long, and temperature was great, you know, with the drought and the drier climate, the mosquitoes were not really that, in the grand scheme of things, were not that bad. And I just had I don't know. I feel like every time I go hunting and it's with a friend and it's a destination, doesn't matter what the outcome is as far as tags, It's just, you can never, it's like another experience. It's like at the top.
Yeah.
Every time.
You can't put a price tag on that stuff.
You can't, man. I had a great time. And it's like, I think that people are starting to realize too with social media that you start seeing so many people just posting pictures of success that there's more to it than just that, you know? And I would love to have been able to like post a picture. Here's my Osceola from this year. But sharing the time with my friends and stuff like that, it was great, you know?
How long did it take you to pull that tag?
That's a great question. So yeah, so I believe it was 3 years ago I started applying for the limited quota, three or four. So what happened is last year I drew for the same WMA is a PA term, I forget what they call them, but the management unit, right? GMU, I don't know. And I drew for March. I forget which week it was, but my son was due in April. And so my wife's like, there's no way.
I remember that.
There's no way.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what was going to happen. So what happens is when you give that preference point back, seems like you actually, you keep your preference points. So I drew this year and it was probably like pretty much a guarantee I was going to draw because I had several preference points. But now I'm going to start all over again.
So let's talk about that here for a little bit. Give us a quick education on how to play the floor at preference points if you want to go and try to pull a quota tag for down there.
Yeah, so they have a site, and I forget what it is because if you go to the general Florida DNR site, like you have to go to a different site. And I've been hunting down there on and off for a couple of years. So I just like log in with my last four, my social security, and it has me like memorizing the system. But basically, I don't know which time of the year it is, if you can do it now or what, but it's way before the season. It might be the fall. You just go in and then you apply for preference points. There's certain ones that you can pay money to apply for. So I actually applied for like a bunch of points for this one hunt that would have been like in like flooded cypress stuff, like true like thick, Florida gnarly swamp Osceolas that it's such a limited hunt though. It's like really, really good. I had applied for that and I didn't get anything. And that one, it doesn't matter if you buy five preference points, they're $5 a piece, or you buy 100 of them and you drop $500. It's just, you either get drawn or you don't. So that one's a little dicey.
So that's like a true lottery. So
that's
you're just
true
putting
lottery.
Your name in
yeah.
the hat.
But it's unlimited stuff. If you want to spend $5,000 for a chance, you can do that. But it's like, I mean, everybody's got their tipping point, how much you're willing to try.
What
so
it's worth to them.
Yeah, so if you just want to go and spend $5 to get one chance at one of those and then do your general preference point like lottery, and what you do is you get to pick three different locations, and then each location, you'll pick the weeks of that hunt. So if you really like one particular area, you might pick like three different weekends of the hunts. But what it does, it definitely keeps pressure off of the animals a lot more, and it's better. You can certainly buy a general turkey tag and hunt areas that don't have the limited quota entry, right? You can do that. It's a lot more challenging, you know, and I'm really proud to say and still humble about it, but that I killed a turkey on one of those, you know, and that bird was silent. So honestly, going into this, my expectations were like, dude, this is going to be a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't any easier. It really wasn't. It's turkey hunting. And you can't make the birds be vocal. But so the way that it works though is I do believe like versus like Pennsylvania where you get one tag if you buy your bonus tag right away. I believe in Florida, you can get drawn for like a limited quota hunt. You can hit one of those lottery hunts and you can hunt like a general place. I do think so. And you can kill a couple birds potentially.
So let me ask you this. For the limited quota, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your preference points carry over, correct?
Until you
draw.
Draw, yeah.
So it is still a true lottery. There's no weight on your preference points. As far as like, it's not a weighted draw. So for example, like in Western areas where you're drawing big game, they may only draw from the top 10% of what that preference point is in that unit. Does that make sense of what I'm saying? So like, let's just say let's call it unit 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the minimum preference point that you need to have is 7. And there's so much backup that there's preference points all the way to 13. They're only going to draw people for the quota from 7 and up.
Okay.
Florida is not like that.
Well, I'm not positive because I do believe that, from what I heard, if you have 3 preference points, you should get drawn. So I don't know if like anybody can get drawn or if they're only pulling from those
top tier percentage of preference points.
Yeah. You know, but then the nice thing is they do let you take a guest. So if you play your cards right,
how does the guest thing work? So
I don't really
understand. They can just come with, right? They can't shoot a turkey, right?
No, if they have their turkey tag, they can come as a guest and hunt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think that has to do with the fact that it's like, dude, do you want to hunt solo out there in gator country? And
yeah,
I don't know.
That's very valid.
I don't know if that's what it has to do with or not.
So if they have 30, if they pull 30 people for a limited quota, there's 60 potential tags.
I think that's how it actually works. Yeah, it's 35. Again, don't quote me on that because I'm not sure. You know, I just I drew my permit, picked the dates, and went out there and did my thing. And I would recommend anybody that's considering Osceola. Number one, if you really, really, really want to kill an Osceola, your best bet is to do a outfitted hunt on private property. And I'm not sure if they can use feeders and stuff too. I like to hunt. I like the challenge, you know, but the limited quota, like I'm saying, it does not make it, quote, easier. It just makes it more accessible without as much hunting pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And that I would recommend, anybody to apply for. And in the meantime, if you want to dip your toes in just the general public, you can do that, but don't expect birds just coming in, just ripping and hammering. Because you're going to have hunters following, and they just probably aren't going to do it.
So to kind of piggyback off of what Jimmy's saying, we're growing really a lot of our Florida members, and we got a handful of members down there now, and we have this thing called Hunt Swap Program. So you basically trade a hunt that you have in your state for another hunt in another state. And this has kind of been really popular as of late, where people have been trading whitetail hunts to go down and trade Osceola hunt with the guys down in Florida. So if you're a Serviceide member or if you're interested in potentially joining Serviceide, this is something that we offer that can really help you out. I know that Tucker, he shot an Osceola in Florida last year. I believe it was last year. And he was looking at outfitters. He said the cheapest one was like $1,500.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got to pay to play with that stuff.
And he got his done with $400 invested into it for a week.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's priceless. It truly is. You know, the amount of money that I saved by camping out, too, is crazy. I spent $200 for one night at a hotel the first night that I was in town. And it was nice. I was able to get a shower and just kind of get my stuff ready after traveling. Before meeting up with the guys, but I mean, camping out, like, and then just the experiences, and then cooking burgers and, you know, wild game and stuff like that. We had the sandbar deer that Kyle killed on that.
How was that? I heard that's phenomenal.
Dude, it was great. Yeah. And yeah. So it was awesome. And then Craig, the other guy, we did a pod the other day, was there. It was funny till I connected the dots because he's just so humble. He had this cake with him and we had cake for dessert. And then I was like, hold on a second, because I realized he had a couple phone calls. He's like, oh, I'll call you later. And it was his birthday. He didn't even tell us.
That's pretty cool.
So it was cool. So there's 3 guys sitting around a campfire singing happy birthday. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Awesome. So, yeah, I had a great experience. I would recommend anybody to go down there, do it. Overcome your fears, man. The first time, I want to add this in there. The first time I went down, I got a pair of snake boots. I'm scared of these darn snakes. Dude, they gave me blisters. It was terrible. They weren't really broken in. So when I decided to hunt this year, I was packing my stuff. I wanted to be light. And I looked at my boots. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to take the Crispies. They're low ankle boots. Dude, those were fantastic. They gave me great stability through the sand and everything else. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the chances of getting bit by a poison snake and it being fatal is pretty slim.
Right.
The reality is. And, so gear-wise, I liked those. The Crispies, they're. I would get something like that where it's got a real stiff, like, I guess shank's the term, shank. But something that's like mobile and athletic because you're covering ground. Bug tamer suit is a necessity. Thermocell's a necessity. and just be willing to think outside the box. Look for signs, look for tracks, listen, and then just be patient, and you can kill a bird. You know, I mean, I almost got to kill my second Osceola hunting. This is my third time hunting. I went down once before, and not many people can say that they've had opportunities like that.
There's a reason that everybody saves the Osceola for last on the Grand Slam.
It's tough. So yeah. So Grand Slam wise, though, I do have an Osceola under my belt. I've got plenty of Easterns. So I got the Merriam and the Rio on the list. So that might be my next adventure.
There you go. So any closing thoughts?
No, like I said, when you guys go hunting, have fun. Don't put all the emphasis on the kill. Be ethical. Be thoughtful of other hunters and be safe. There's no turkey. There's no deer. There's no anything worth a casualty, an injury, fatality. And just remember, people are watching what you're doing, listening to what you're doing, and be just above all, be ethical. And make sure you connect with Serviceide. We got an awesome program. Love to help increase your success, network with you guys, and make some memories together.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining in and listening to the Whitetail Theories podcast. Jimmy, we got to get together more and do some more of these together rather than us doing them solo.
Oh, we shall. We shall. I got some awesome hunts from this past fall to talk about, some Whitetail Theories, Missouri, Pennsylvania, that we're just getting started. So
that's awesome.
Cool. We'll talk to you guys.